At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. Sitting in the John chair is editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. Scott, hey. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for filling in. John will be back on Monday. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. John's nothing terrible. He's attending a funeral, but it's for an elderly relative. I always think that it's funny when we think, well, you know, it's not not a tragedy because they lived to be old. But, you know, you miss them more if they lived to be old because you knew them longer.
You think?
I mean, I'm just saying it's worth considering that possibility, unless you got sick of them because you knew them for so long and you're like, bye.
Well, that plus, you know, they dementia and other things, which you and I have both dealt with. I mean, that it can be actually a blessing when they.
I mean, or at least a mercy. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Some people, it's a blessing. You know, it's not always bad when people die. Okay, so that's dark. It's really, anyway, thanks, everyone. Please like, follow, and share the show. Please continue. So we did achieve our $1,000 for Robbie Aid. Thank you, everyone, for getting us to $1,000. We do that every month in order to keep our producer, who we you know, as you guys know very much, we really need. Robbie will be in the background and starting about half an hour. He's got something to do this morning. If you would like to, kick in and tip, it doesn't hurt. He can use the money. He's still, you know, this is his job now. GoFundMe.com/F/Deprogram Robbie, or you just go to GoFundMe and search for Deprogram Robbie as one word. Thanks for everything. Okay, so lots going on. We're going to go over this report that came out of the UK that's blaming President Putin of Russia for that 2018 poisoning of a 44-year-old British woman. We'll get into the details there. Also, the New York Times has a new report about how the corruption in the Zelensky government and exactly how it works. And, you know, it's not a big secret, but the how is kind of somewhat interesting. So we'll get into that. Obviously, all eyes right now are focused on the Pete Hegseth career death watch. Will he survive the media, the Friday afternoon, Saturday morning traditional media dump when resignations and firings occur at times like this? If he's still DOD chief by Sunday morning, I'd say he's safe for the time.
DOW, Ted.
That's right. That's right. Although it's not formally that. So I'm still going to call him the sec def, whether he likes it or not. I mean, he might drone me. That could happen. But, you know, like on the air, at least I'd get ratings for once. and new poll out. Trump's disapproval rating is continuing to increase. Can the Republicans save their asses? Lots of questions in the YouTube chat to get through before we start these things. And also, as if that wasn't enough action-packed deprogramming for you today, there's breaking news. You guys probably, if you have a phone, you've already seen it. Netflix has just committed to purchase Warner Brothers, the legendary film studio, but they also have a bunch of other properties, including Max, which HBO Max, which was HBO, then it became Max, now it's HBO Max. So that sounds like I just think of MaxiPad every time I hear it.
Yeah, me too.
$83 billion. Obviously, there are antitrust implications here. I know, Scott, you have thoughts about that. And
let me just say that I can't speak for John, but I think I can on this instance and say that if Netflix wants to buy this podcast for half that amount, I have to believe that even socialist Ted Rall would have to say yes.
Well, we do live in a capitalist system, So until the revolution comes, as Jean-Paul Sartre said, we must all live with the system that we have. So yes, you are correct. All right, let's do some questions, and then we'll get to our first topic. Cool. And Scott, you can think of what you want to talk about first, because the order is not really that important. Okay, so Elliot Coverty, thank you very much for this question. With Ukraine appearing to be on its last legs and Russia poised for victory, have Western elites learned anything about how to conduct prudent foreign policy since 2022? This will be a short answer, Scott.
I'm sorry. Ted and I have been talking about this for years. And the problem is, you know, initially I was very much in support of Ukraine because they were invaded. Nobody likes to be invaded. However, now that this has gone on, you can't keep calling something a democracy if it doesn't have, you know, democracy. So in this instance, the report on the corruption is no surprise, because Zelensky has shut down all opposition. He shut down all elections. And when you do that, well, you've opened the floodgates for all sorts of mischief. And I mean, this is Ted, you cannot, of all people, Ted Rall cannot be surprised.
No. And we'll be getting into the Zelensky corruption story. But I mean, have the U.S. policymakers learned anything?
No,
clearly not. I mean, look at what's going on now. We'll be talking about the Venezuela situation. But, the approach to Venezuela makes the neocon attack on Afghanistan and Iraq look positively professional by comparison. I mean, they're not even bothering to message the American people about it. And the legal structures are as flimsy as a Jenga game right before the very end, right? I mean, it's completely insane. So no, they haven't learned anything. Another question from Medarasian. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. I'm curious about your perspectives on the Arab Spring. What role did Obama and the CIA play? Why and how did Egypt fall in 2012? Well, the Arab Spring, of course, started in Tunisia. With the overthrow of Ben Ali, the fall of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt was a big part of it. Look, the CIA played a huge role in the overthrow. The Ben Ali thing less so, but in terms of Egypt, the CIA, the U.S. called Mubarak and said, "You've got to step down." And basically, the Egypt was a client state. I mean, this, by the way, this is one of my favorite rants. I always say you can't have a nonviolent revolution. And Tahrir Square and the overthrow of Mubarak was largely a peaceful affair. I mean, not to say that there was no violence or anything. In fact, I know a woman, a reporter, who was there for Al Jazeera in Tahrir Square, and she was raped in Tahrir Square. Okay, so by gross guys who were there. So it's not like there was no violence, but I mean, it was not a revolution, right? As you and I both know it from history. And what do you get out of that? You end up with Al-Sisi, who is completely the same as Mubarak.
Yes, yeah.
He's exactly the same.
It comes out of the dictator factory out of Central Ohio, where they produce these guys. Hey, Ted, audio for some reason. I'm going to jump off and then jump back on. Okay.
Okay. Yes. Maybe you can use your phone. Switch to your phone or whatever.
For this technical glitch.
Okay, that's totally fine. Okay, so as Scott Stantis tries to get back in, and I'll put him back in right away. This happened yesterday on the DMZ America podcast, so I have a feeling that Scott needs to call his tech people. But anyway, thank you, FUSO, for the dollar donation. Sloppy Russian Spies, which the title of today's broadcast sounds snotty. Yeah, it kind of does. That was kind of like that was my duty. Scott, do you hear me now?
I do, and I apologize for
great.
That.
Great, yeah, no worries. These things happen all the time, unfortunately. comment that I think is worth mentioning from Triple J XYZ. The peasants are sent to the meat grinder while the elite enjoy caviar in a Swiss ski village courtesy of U.S. and EU taxpayers, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's always been the case. I mean, I'm trying to think. The presidents of Mexico. I think there are more ex-presidents and former presidents of Mexico in Connecticut than there are actually in Mexico. And I think that's a fact. They don't stick around. They get their Luger and they move on. And so, yeah, Zelensky's going to be in Switzerland. Didn't you say there's
He has several places. He has a place in Lake Como, and so he could easily end up in Germany, Italy, France. I have a feeling he'll end up in France because it looks like Macron is his best boy.
Okay, well there you go. it's unfortunate because, as I say, initially he seemed to be a righteous fighter against an invasion of his country, and that okay.
Did he really?
He did. Oh,
that's
come
funny,
on.
Funny, because I don't remember having that opinion, and I don't think I expressed
that. You did
that
not.
Opinion.
I did, and most people did, because that was the optics. But then, you know, as you pointed out, and you were one of the few ones who was, because it was, you know, not kosher to say that Zelensky was somehow not a Democrat.
A grifter?
Well, it turns out that, that's exactly
well,
what he is.
Since when has anything bad ever happened from electing an actor as president?
Well, some good things happen. Let's be clear.
Well, in your opinion. okay. But anyway, go ahead. I apologize. I interrupted.
That's all right. I'm just saying, you know, one time we did it, we had the largest economic expansion in the history of the country. So that would be a good thing.
Really? Bill Clinton wasn't an actor, though. That was the biggest.
Bill Clinton, I think, there's a lot of momentum coming from the Reagan
from the George H.W. Bush administration and the 1990 recession.
That was such a shallow recession. God, you have one recession, they hold it against you forever.
Well, it was personal to me because I graduated in 1991 from Columbia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that used to be a good school before it was decertified by Trump. It's like you got out and literally they canceled the jobs fair. Not one single employer was interested.
Is that right?
Yeah, not one single employer can.
Well, and this is what, I mean, this plays into other recent events, when George H.W. Bush in 1991 said that the recession was over. And
don't do that. Don't tell the American people that they're doing. In fact, it's, you know, this is kind of like, you ever see that French movie, Scott, called Ridicule? If you haven't, you would love it. It's a costume drama.
No.
Well worth seeing. Look it up. Basically, it's about a young poor aristocrat, those things did exist, from a swampy part of southern France, who is basically goes to Paris and hangs out at the court in order to curry favor, to try to get royal funds so that they can, you know, drain the swamps literally in his district and get rid of malaria that's afflicting the peasants. So he goes and they tell him basically what he's going to have to do to suck up and become popular in the French court, which Ooh. Is, and basically, wait, why did I bring this up? What did you just say before that? Oh my God.
Well, about George H.W. Bush saying that the recession was over.
Yes. And he said, and so one of the pieces of advice that the older experienced aristocrat tells this young man is never laugh at your own joke. Always let other people praise you. And I think that's really valuable.
Like, okay. Do you laugh at your own jokes? Because I laugh at my own jokes.
If I will admit that if it's really a good joke, in my opinion, I find myself doing that, and then I remember the movie. Don't do that. Stop that. All right, let's talk about another question here. Sherlock Holmes, any update on the Louvre crown jewels? I feel like that is a downplayed story. No, basically, there's been some arrests. The French are investigating. The jewels have not been recovered. That's a, you know, and by the way, nor were they insured.
Oh, so, wait. I'm sorry. This is a piece of information I did not know. They were not insured?
No. According to the Louvre, which used to be, like Columbia, an institution that had that was worth something, they couldn't afford the insurance, the coverage. I guess it's like Obamacare. The premiums were just too high. So they couldn't afford it. And they're like, we'll be fine. So
what's the worst that can happen?
Right, exactly. So the jewels are MIA still. I would imagine that, look, the French police and the Sûreté are not, it's not unknown for them to torture people in custody. So I would imagine that the thieves are currently like hanging from the ceiling and you know, having a very bad day and very bad night every day and being like, where are the jewels? Where are the jewels? Où sont-ils? But we will obviously keep you posted when anything breaks on that.
Quite a story.
Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, and it's not high tech. It's not like it was like they got a ladder. that was pretty much it. It was a bunch of, it sounds so far, although there's there now that the fact that they can't find the jewels, but doesn't it sound like it was just a bunch of kids? It's a, hey dude, we got a ladder.
Yeah, like I got the ladder for the weekend. Let's go. Yeah, you know, it sounded like it was a really well executed thing until we figured out it wasn't. Okay, Village Idiot TV, thanks for the question. Disagrees with me. Perhaps the civil rights and the movement in the United States was a kind of nonviolent revolution, if only regionally. Also, India must maintain hope for nonviolent change. I maintain hope for the second coming of Jesus Christ, but it's not going to happen. And similarly, look, the civil rights movement was not a revolution. Is the replacement of one class of elites by another. It involves, as Mao Zedong, it is not a dinner party. It is the violent overthrow of one caste. And people do not, you know, one class of elites does not give up that power nonviolently ever. And in terms of India, that's also not a revolution. That's an independent struggle. And I'll save you the trouble. South Africa, the struggle against apartheid, is that's an emancipation movement. Also not a revolution, as proven by the fact that the rich white Afrikaners, who were rich white Afrikaners before 1986, are still rich white Afrikaners today. If a revolution had happened, that would not be true today. Well, but I do maintain, hope for the second coming of Christ and for the second coming of print media.
To be fair, they're soon to be rich white Americans, because they're the only ones apparently who are allowed to immigrate here now.
Yes, that's a good point. Thanks for that correction, Scott. Philip Blair has a political cartooning related question.
Sure.
Didn't they try to tell us the Arab Spring happened because a political cartoonist made a 14-minute video? What was the political cartoon angle?
Oh, right. Oh, gosh. I have a vague memory of that. And do you remember it, Ted? Because I'm trying.
I have a vague memory of it, too.
And it wasn't Farhat in Syria, who was the cartoonist, and Assad's goons picked him up and beat him to within an inch of his life, broke both his hands. It was pretty atrocious. But that's not what the trigger was. The trigger was... oh my gosh. And now I'm trying to remember, what was another scandal? Oh, Hillary Clinton and the video that triggered the killings in Libya. Oh gosh. Is that, remember that, Ted? The, not the ambassador, but the ambassador.
Benghazi attack?
Yeah. What's that?
The Benghazi, the attack on the Benghazi consulate. Yeah.
And that was caused by a video that right. had like, views.
Right. And also I remember part of the blame was not a video, right? But it was the Danish Muhammad cartoons.
Right. Well, that's what the video was about. It showed them on YouTube. It was a YouTube video that created.
Yeah. So, all right. So to refresh people's memories, there was a Danish newspaper, a satirical magazine that published a series of cartoons, basically that were just like Muhammad sucks cartoons. And they're kind of, if you see them now, you're probably like, oh, I remember those. One's got like one where Muhammad's turban is a old fashioned bomb with the fuse sticking out. Yeah. And there's a bunch of others. Anyway, those cartoons, it's hard to overstate just how much shit they caused around the world as they were spread by rabble rousers, like basically radical Islamists in Kabul and all over the world, Cairo. They showed them. There were mass demonstrations all over the place. There were assassins dispatched to kill those cartoons. There was a fatwa, the cartoon. Guy, I love this story. He was sitting in his house in Copenhagen, and he was like, he had like a Jodie Foster style safe room in his house. I mean, as all cartoonists do, and as Scott and I guys, don't forget that. But he had tricked out his house like a fortress in preparation for this. And some murderer, some Al-Qaeda type dude, some ISIS type dude, broke into his house with a fucking, you know, AR-15, probably an AR-15, but an AR-15 style gun, armed to the teeth, grenades, the whole thing. And the guy basically went to his safe room. The cartoonist, he was like 65, and basically locked all the doors. And he had speakers in there. It was like a movie. And he's like, hey, asshole, guess what? You're locked in. I'm safe. The cops are on their way. Fuck you. And like started insulting the prophet and like just going on and on until the cops arrived. And the guy's just sitting in there drinking port and just like waiting for the whole thing to happen. I was just like, you know, I don't appreciate the cartoon, and I'm not sure it was a good idea to insult someone's religion gratuitously. But that said, I got to hand it to that cartoonist. That's some pretty balls out action.
Yeah, I love that. We may or may not have safe rooms if anyone's listening who may want to do us harm. I want to be really clear that you don't know that we don't have a safe room.
Well, that's true.
And I would, and I really clear.
Not to mention, I also have an attack cat.
And, yes, Clovis will.
The bloodshed. There's already been enough bloodshed due to that cat, and nobody needs to see any more. So ISIS, I'm looking at you. Fuck off.
Well, we just got a dog, and he's been leaving telltale signs that the squirrel issue we were dealing with is no longer an issue. Just saying, there's a pile of fluff and bones around the I've stumbled across in our backyard now.
You know, so. things turn ugly when animals do shit. All right, so let's. What do you want to talk about first? Novichok, Zelensky.
Zelensky's a great. I mean, here's the thing. Right. About Zelensky, if you followed, Ted and I also do another podcast called DMZ America. And for years, you and I have been talking about this. And as I mentioned at the top of the show here, that I was a supporter of Ukraine and its resistance against the Russian invasion. But you continually brought up, you know, Zelensky, not a Democrat, you know, Zelensky, the corruption that was starting to show its face. Where was the money going? We didn't even know what happened, for instance, to Russians who were taken prisoners. Have we ever seen or heard a report about what Ukraine does with Russian POWs? I haven't, and I've made a concerted effort to look. I couldn't just be looking in the wrong places. The point is that democracy's got a democracy, you know? That's just, there's no other way around it. And so when you're supporting someone who is supposedly fighting for democracy. He was a duly elected, as Ted will give you the backstory on that. But he was ostensibly a duly elected president of Ukraine. But then he cancels elections. He cancels regional elections. And people here and this is what drives me crazy, Ted, is people here in the diaspora of political talk make excuses for anything. He says, well, he's having a war. Well, you know, guess what, folks? The United States had elections during a fucking civil war. You can have elections. They're not that hard to hold, regardless of the circumstance. Yes, they'd be extraordinary circumstances, but what a message to the world to say, yeah, you know, even though we're being invaded by an overwhelming force, we still are holding them off enough to have elections. And that would have been an extraordinary moment. Zelensky chose not to do that.
Losing?
Well, I don't know that he would have lost the early elections. Who knows? I mean, that's the thing about elections. You don't know. That's why they hold them.
Remember, he had very low approval rating before the war began. So
did he?
Yeah, he was in the toilet. I mean, he would have been jealous of the numbers Trump has right now.
And he could have, I mean, yeah, he could. And you can always bring that back. Don't forget, Yeltsin was polling at 9% when he ran for re-election in Russia.
I'm surprised. I'm like, who are these 9%?
Well, his family and the oligarchs he gave stuff to.
Bartender.
To finish the thought, you have been you've been on the cutting edge of this story, as you are so often, and you get no credit for it. You have been pointing this out for years. And some of us began to listen to you and began to look, oh yeah, Ted's right. This is corrupt. It's undemocratic. We're backing the wrong horse, or we shouldn't be backing any horse. We should just be going, wow, look at that. That stuff's happening. And maybe that's what Trump means when he says this wouldn't have happened under his watch.
I don't know. We can relitigate the whole Ukraine war, and I'm always happy to do that because I feel like I feel okay with my position, right? I'm not running away from it. And I don't run away from my positions when I change them either. But In this particular case, what I really wanted to focus on is this report from the New York Times, which is like, I'm shocked yeah. to find corruption here.
Yes.
I mean, it's like they basically, Ukraine has had, has been ranked something like number 173 by Transparency International's list of most transparent countries, least corrupt countries. I mean, it had a long-standing corruption problem, even by the standards of former Soviet republics, and even pre-Zelensky as well. Zelensky ran in part claiming that there wouldn't be corruption. He did have a pretty funny joke when he was running. He was asked, like, can anyone be president of Ukraine without stealing? I don't know. We should try to find out. Well, apparently we did find out. Apparently the answer is still no. But according to the New York Times, which has been, you know, running interference for Zelensky for 3 years plus, they're saying that Ukraine set up these oversight boards to make sure that there's no corruption. But, basically Zelensky stacked those boards with his buddies, left the seats completely empty. What, Hunter Biden wasn't available, or stalled them from being set up at all? And that Zelensky even rewrote the company charters so that there would be no oversight whatsoever. The point is, here's the issue, Scott. Even if we think that Ukraine is a righteous cause, or any country is a righteous cause, and that we should interfere in that, and I don't believe in that. The U.S. experiences with regime change. Shouldn't you, as a caretaker of American taxpayer funds, how can you fund a wildly corrupt country when you know that all the money is not going to go to the defense of that country? It's going to be stolen and go to pay for villas in Lake Como. That's what happened here. Any asshole could see it coming because of Ukraine's current and recent history of corruption. I mean, on that basis alone, I would have said, like, well, we love you, Ukrainians. You guys are beautiful. Love you. You're all blonde and everything. Can't help, because we don't trust you. We don't think you'll... I mean, look at all the billions we poured into Afghanistan, into, again, a wildly corrupt government. All the money, the soldiers who wanted to fight the Taliban didn't have ammunition because all the money was stolen. So, I mean, you can't really help a corrupt country, is my point.
Right. And the reason I brought up all the other earlier stuff is that, you know, it just set the table for corruption. You know, when you're supposed to be a democratic, country with democratic institutions that presumably have safeguards and governors to prevent corruption, that's basically what what we do, or what democracies do. And when you get rid of democracy, then you set the table. You're going to have corruption. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And that's what's happened here. And the world is handing this guy lottery, big lottery sized checks on foam core, saying, you're already a winner. Here's $1 billion for this, $1 billion for that, with no accountability. Well, again, sticky fingers are going to him.
Oh my God. I love Elliot's comment. Irony of American foreign policy. People who don't understand how to govern Ohio or Michigan think they know how to govern a country with a totally different culture and history across the ocean. Can't say it better, so I'm not going to try. Philip Blair, thank you for this. That 14 minute movie was called Innocence of Muslims. It's an anti-Islamic film, written and produced by Nakula Basili Nakula. So that's the film, that Arab Spring thing, that provocative thing. Sneaker Dad, most people believed Ukraine was a democracy and they were wrong in a big way.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, and this is an academic question, but if you're assessing, first of all, I'm not sure that every democracy needs US defense dollars, but but let's just say that that's the metric somehow. Ukraine was like barely a democracy before 2022, right? I mean, like, they overthrew their democratically elected president in 2014. And so here's a question. If you overthrow a guy undemocratically as part of a partly CIA, partly Nazi funded coup, which is what happened, then are his successors legitimate? And I'm like, ish, maybe.
Eventually.
eventually. I mean, yeah, it's hard to say historically, right? Okay, so I think we can sort of agree. So if you had to go back, if we had to go through this again and say like, oh, like a terrible, you know, a terrible country, let's say China. Oh, here's a question for you, Scott, and then we'll move on.
Okay.
All right. Let's say China attacks Taiwan, which is definitely a democracy. How do you feel? Should we help?
How do I feel, or what is going to happen?
Well, do you think we should help?
We are so immersed in that relationship that I don't know that we'd have any choice. I have to believe that, you know, through treaty, through mutual defense pacts, through just the fact that they buy a bunch of our ships and guns and bullets, we're going to go in there. Should we go in? Is that the hill that you want to flush 100,000 American lives down? Boy, I'd have to think long and hard on that. And it's weird because it's not like this is a new issue, Ted. I haven't had the time.
And I my father-in-law was a Taiwanese independence advocate. I know the issue. Here's the thing. I think it's a simple issue for the U.S. Okay. The official stance of the United States government is that Taiwan is not an independent republic. The official stance of the United States government is that Taiwan is part of China. We've assured China of that since the Ford administration. Carter. Right. So basically, you know, we can't defend a non-country. So like legally, as far as we're concerned, unless we recognize American independence, I mean, unless we recognize Taiwan independence, they have to declare independence. My point is, I don't even think then we should go, but I'm a non-interventionist, but there's nothing to talk about until that happens. Right.
No, and you're absolutely correct. It's not a sovereign country. It's not recognized by the United Nations. It's not recognized by the United States government as a sovereign country. I wish it were. It should be. I mean, it's been long enough.
They would have to declare independence first for that to happen.
Of course.
They haven't had the balls to do that yet. So,
well, you know. Trump, if you remember on the campaign trail, had alluded to just saying, let's just, you know, just pull the trigger. And if anyone's going to just pull the trigger, it's this guy. And he hasn't done it. He's looked at the dynamics and said, okay, this is no, we can't. This is going to get way too messy. And so, given what you've just stated, I'm anti-intervention now too. I mean, I tend to get seduced by, oh, this sounds like a good idea until it's not.
Well, that's the American way.
I think, and that's one thing I respect about the Trump administration so far, except for, you know, on some of its foreign policy, which is that it's against it. It doesn't like war. It sees war as stupid, wasteful, expensive. And you can make the case that maybe it's necessary, but I would make the case that, you know, if you look at many conflicts through a historic lens, that they were not necessary and that America just got, you know, hurt itself more by jumping in. So with Taiwan, that's a great academic. I'll have to give that some more thought because I think what our reaction would be is just send them a crap ton more arms, but they're armed to the teeth now. So Lord knows what else we can sell them.
Right, right.
And ICE agents, those guys, apparently they're fat and stupid and they're, you know, did you read those reports? That's hilarious. We can send them.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Okay, so let's see. I dropped the feed a little bit. My apologies. That's my fault. Okay, so let's see. We have an ad, and I should go ahead and read that ad.
Read it with verve. I love
always,
that word.
Always with verve. Okay, come on. Do, 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 do. All right, ready to level up your game? AIM Controllers is where custom meets unbeatable value, and right now it's the best deal of the year. We start with official Sony and Xbox controllers, fully compatible with console and PC. No functionality lost. Then you go wild with custom features. Smart bumpers, paddles, grips, stick height, custom buttons, even design your own PS5 snap panels. And here's the part no one else is doing. Lifetime warranty on all modified parts. That's right, lifetime. What other company does that? Exactly. Normally, a fully loaded setup could cost you $400, but during our one price promo, it's just $209 US or 182 euros, no matter how many features you add. Use code RUMBLE at checkout and lock it in. This is your sign. Go to aimcontrollers.com and build the last controller you'll ever need.
Ooh. Now that was Verve.
It almost makes me want to start gaming. Okay, so we should talk about let's talk about this UK Novichok report. So back in 2018, the British authorities claimed that a British national, a 44-year-old woman, mother of three, died from a nerve agent called Novichok. They claimed that this was a military-grade nerve agent. And basically their theory was that a pair of Russian FSB operatives had been sent to the UK to kill a Russian anti-Putin dissident. Basically that the operation was called off, so the derps threw it away. Somehow it came into contact, the perfume bottle containing the agent that had been dumped in a trash can, somehow ended up being exposed. This woman was exposed to it.
Oh, no. The story gets better, Ted.
And she died.
Her partner gave it to her as a gift.
Dumpster diving partner. Yeah.
Well, he claims he got it at a charity bin, which I'm not sure. This is a BBC report, which I'm assuming is a thrift store or something like that. So, so he bought her some used perfume.
I love you, baby. I love you. I love you so good. You love me so much.
And she sprayed it on her wrist. And
you smell so good. Wait, what's happening? Wait, what's wrong? Honey? Okay, so now... So look, that story has more holes in it than, more holes in it than a Venezuela attack, propaganda video. But now the new report, the British are tripling down on this. And now they're saying, well, it's Putin who sent this in to, sent these FSB operatives to kill someone who they didn't kill. And so Putin should be, and the Russians should be held legally and morally and ethically responsible for what happened here. I'm going to just say that I don't know if I really want to call bullshit on it because I'm not sure it quite rises to the level of being as credible as bullshit, but it's pretty lame. I mean, it just seems now that like with the loss of Ukraine, the West is struggling to find ways to remind everyone why Russia is evil.
Well, from what I can read, and I can only read what is available, obviously, and that is that this woman in the perfume did apparently die from exposure to a nerve agent. Initially, they thought it was something else, that they actually called her a drug addict, and the BBC reported her as a drug addict, her being a drug addict and died from an overdose. I'm assuming this is based on toxicology and based on fact. God knows, we've never been lied to by government before, Ted.
especially not about a rival government who our people don't like.
So what makes you think that this doesn't pass the smell test?
Well, okay. So first of all, we're being told that there's ways to sort of ID a nerve agent and say, okay, well, we know based on the chemical composition of this thing, not only that only a nation state could have made it, but on top of that, we know which nation state it came from. So here's the thing. I know I didn't graduate, but I did do 3 years at Columbia School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. I was an applied physics and nuclear engineering major. And let me just say that like that kind of chemical you can identify radioactive substances pretty well. Like you can pretty much say where a certain batch of plutonium came from or uranium, but you can't really, I'm not with 100% certainty, but with let's say 90% certainty. You can't do that with a nerve agent. You can't, there's just no identifying markers. So it's like they're saying something that's not true from a physics standpoint and from a chemical composition standpoint. So just on that basis alone, I never believed the story. And we don't, I mean, it's kind of like, also, where's the proof that this was a nerve agent at all? And nerve agents can come from anywhere, right? I mean, hell, like, they could have originated in the UK. You know, who, it could have been some, you know, industrial disposal where someone stole this from a factory and dumped it and then thought better of it, dumped it into a dumpster where it ended up at the tag sale, right? I mean, I don't know. I just, is it possible that this went down exactly the way that the Brits say? Sure. But, you know, there's just not enough certainty there to say we're going to, I mean, it feels like a real stretch to be like Russian President Vladimir Putin murdered this woman.
Yeah. That's where the report gets, you know, it comes off the rails. And their connection was that there was a Russian dissident that lived nearby. That's where this could have come from. And that seems fairly weak tea as well, but you're right, Ted, the way the report meanders along, and I read a little piece of it this morning, it sort of goes doop, 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 maybe these, you know, some dissidents, this is sort of the MO for Russian agents is to poison these guys. This is the poison they used, blah, blah, blah. And Putin, and you're kind of sitting there reading, looking at this thing kind of going, wait, what? Do you think Putin actually had like a card table, like a foldable card table, and had a little box of these perfumes? He was just sort of everything must go. It's like, deadly perfume, barely used.
He makes ladies of Ural smell the way that they smell.
Like cabbage and potatoes. Mm-hmm. Who does not love? So you're Ted, your smellometer kind of picking up on this, it's going from let's give it the best spin. Some goofy agents were there, they're going to try and douse this guy, and they were going to kill his daughter as well, apparently, allegedly, and give her some perfume, which seems weird if they wanted to kill him, but I don't know what they're into. And then it didn't work, so they throw it out. I mean, this isn't stuff that gets approved at the highest levels, you know. This isn't
right. That's a fair point too, right? I mean, so yeah, even if this were, I don't know, let's blame that American admiral. Apparently he's taking the fall for everything these days. Let's move on to him. There's a lot to talk about with this drone. The Yemen. I don't know why the thing says Yemen, but with the boat attack in
off of the coast of Venezuela.
Venezuela, yeah. So basically, I was talking to Jermall Thomas. He interviewed me this morning about this earlier before our show, and he brought up a really good point, which is, you know, why do we only care? This is a double tap strike. So double tap strike. As at least in recent history, originated with something that the Bush and Obama administrations used to do all the time in places like Pakistan. And they probably, you know, sure it still happens. Basically, you bomb a target, like usually a car, for example, and then passersby, good Samaritans, first responders, ambulance workers, doctors, nurses, they come to assist. And then, ha ha, aren't we funny? Then we drop another bomb in the same spot and kill all of them. That's called a double tap strike. Basically everyone kind of agrees that's gross. And yet, we do it all the time. So that's what happened here. It's a double tap strike. The changing narratives of the Trump administration definitely raised my hackles. I mean, there's lots of times when you can have a changing story or a changing narrative that's still totally true because you're trying to figure out what happened or you're looking at it from a different point of view. But in this particular case, this event was recorded, right, on video. Yeah. And it was recorded internally and there are detailed logs. So we blew up this boat. It was 40 feet long. There were two survivors, presumably injured. on the high seas, clinging to a piece of wood in the middle of the of the Caribbean. We observed them for 41 minutes, and then we dropped another bomb on them and killed them. I mean, I guess to me what we should have claimed was that it was a coup de grace to put them put people who were going to die for sure out of their misery. Instead, you have this story that, first of all, A, that didn't happen. Well, okay, B, it did happen. Then it's like, okay, well, it was Hegseth. Well, no, it wasn't Hegseth. It was this admirable. Oh, where was Hegseth? He gave the order. No, Hegseth was at the bar or wherever.
He's busy. Yeah, he said, literally, I was busy. There's a lot to do at the Department of War.
He was out warring. So Hegseth is, so all these narratives keep changing. And then it's like, but it was the admiral, but we think he was totally right. And now there's a congressman said, oh, actually, there was a third and a fourth strike. And I don't know if he was joking and being sarcastic or if he's being real. But the point is, certain members of Congress were briefed. They saw the video. Democrats came out of it saying that they'd never seen anything quite like it, even though they'd seen video of other aerial attacks by the United States that killed people. And the Republicans came out of it saying, all A-OK, just like normal. So there's a lot going on here. And the New York Times finally gets around today to questioning, well, are any of the 87 deaths legal? And is it maybe the problem here? You know, obviously we all kind of agree it's not sporting to blow up people who are clinging to a piece of wood. The administration actually argued, Scott, that like they were calling for backup, that they were like on narco-terrorist 911, like calling Harvey Keitel from Pulp Fiction to come save their ass, you know, come and help. Well, they could have gotten help. And I'm like, okay, well, at that point, they could have gotten into a UFO and started an alien invasion of the Earth. I mean, anything could happen. But I mean, come on, they're in the middle of the ocean. There's no evidence for anything. They were trying to right their boat. Okay, the boat was blown to smithereens, but Scott, it was a 40-foot boat in the middle of the ocean. Even if it hadn't been blown up, like, you know, if you and I are in the middle of the ocean, let's say we're both 25 and in tip-top physical condition, we can't turn over a 40-foot boat. I mean, I don't. 10 guys can't turn over a 40-foot boat.
Not in the water. No.
No.
It has made people very uncomfortable. However, it's polling. It's one of the few areas where Trump is actually polling pretty well. People aren't as aghast at this as they should be, because they should be. There's a conservative site here in Alabama called 1819, and the editor of it, who is a remarkable story, quick story, he had been in prison and cleaned up his life, got his crap together, and is now the executive who runs 1819. But he came out with a tweet or an X or whatever it's called today, and said that, you know, due process. I mean, yeah, sure, due process, but I mean, not everyone deserves due process. I'm thinking, this is a guy who went through a system that gave him due process. It seemed like
actually, that's the whole point of due process, is that everybody does deserve due process.
Yes. And so, given that there's no due process, that there's no evidence, this administration has given us no hard evidence that these boats are indeed carrying drugs. The New York Times did do a story on one of the boats that had been blown up, and the guy, okay, he was a fisherman in a crappy little town in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. So to make some extra money, yeah, once in a while he'd move drugs. I'm not defending his being a drug mule, but you know, it was once in a while. They had no idea if that ship they blew up of his at that time had illicit drugs destined for American streets on it or not. And by the way, Ted, I mean, the other thing about this whole war on drugs and getting rid of these guys is that, A, it's never effective. It never slows things down very much. I mean, we had prohibition. We can look at that as the number one model of failure of the government trying to prohibit people from taking illicit substances. And two, I mean, isn't the problem really Americans taking these drugs? I mean, that's the fact that there's a market for that in America. They're not shipping them to.
But there's not even a market. They're not shipping these drugs to America. These drugs, the U.S. is suffering from a major drug problem. The opioid crisis, though, is not. They make cocaine. They send it to Africa. You know, they send it to Trinidad. These boats are not coming to the United States. And they're, if they were, they'd be bringing cocaine, not fentanyl. I mean, the point is, the administration is lying about this. The president claims that every boat he blows up saves 25,000 lives.
What?
It's not saving any life. None. Well, and if it were, it'd be saving African lives, not American lives.
And yeah, and you know how much this Trump cares about African lives, especially Somali.
Yeah, he loves them.
Oh my God. Like his own children.
By the way, I love that number. Isaac says the second strike by admission was done blindly in the fog of war, amateur hour. Yeah, I mean, that's literally what Hegseth said. It was the fog of war. We couldn't see the target. Okay, well, but by definition, you're not allowed under the American rules of engagement to shoot something you can't see. So get your story straight.
They don't have it. The story is that Hegseth was there and was trying to impress himself, or was, you know, he was on his third martini, his breakfast martini. And they saw this and he got, you know, excited and decided to wipe these guys out. It's egregious. It's a war crime. It's plain and simple. I'm sorry.
Well, it's murder.
It's murder.
I love Fuso. Fuso, thanks for the dollar. If we were really serious about killing drug smugglers, we'd be bombing the CIA. Fair point. at least we'd know where to find them.
Very good. No, if we really wanted to, I mean, we would be bombing Chinese ships headed for Mexico, and we'd be bombing Mexico. I mean, but we're not.
But, well, that's true. And that's something that producer Robbie has pointed out in the past. So we should talk about Trump's approval ratings in the minutes we have left. By the way, if you're joining us late, thanks for joining us. Please like, follow, and share the show. We're here Monday through Friday here on Deprogram at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. John Kiriakou is out today. He's attending a relative's funeral. He'll be back on Monday. Do you want to handicap Hegseth's career odds? Is he still sec-def by Monday?
Have there ever been, I'm trying to think, in the first Trump, you know, version 1.0, was there ever an official who got in trouble with the media and the general public who that then Trump jettisoned? I'm trying to think. I mean, there was, Secretary of Defense. I mean, no, Secretary. I mean, the Attorney General, former Senator from Alabama, Jeff Sessions. But he just, because he refused to prosecute things in a way that Trump liked, so he fired him. But I don't remember anyone like getting into this kind of trouble, and then Trump saying, you know, he always doubles down on these guys.
You know what, Scott? I gotta hand that to you. I was thinking that there was a better than 50-50 chance of Hegseth being removed. But you're right. What you just said makes it lower than 50-50 because Trump doesn't do that. He doesn't cut people loose just because there's pressure from Congress or the media or from the voters. He only cuts them loose if they personally are disloyal or offend him personally.
Yeah.
I think I like that. Okay, so we need to talk about Trump's polls. Yesterday on the DMZ America podcast, you and I were joined by a pundit. We were handicapping the midterm elections. New polls just came out after that. Currently, 55% disapprove of Trump's job performance. He's down to 42%. These are Biden-like levels, not good. His biggest loss is among the place where he had his biggest wins that brought him to power, among independents. 31% still approve of Trump, independents, but that's down from 41% just 5 months ago, Scott. That's a pretty significant fall, isn't it?
It's the economy. I hate to drag this old trope out, but it really is the economy, stupid. The economy is performing badly. And as we touched on at the top of this hour, Trump can't just dismiss it and say, everything's fine. I'm not hurting. I can afford things. You can't dismiss the American consumers' pain, and they're going through some significant pain right now. You go to the grocery store, I go to the grocery store, and we buy stuff, and you know, you've just dumped $130 on one bag of groceries. And it's not like we're buying filet mignon and anything. It's like, you know, potato helper or whatever the hell we eat. I don't even know. The fact that you have to address inflation, first of all, you have to admit it's happening. And you have to address it in a serious way. And this administration is in no way, shape, or form is doing that. And you can't fix it quickly. You know, Trump tried to drop the tariffs, the Trump taxes on food items. And it hasn't really had an appreciable effect. Have you gone, Ted, you're French. I'm French. We like bouffe very much.
We.
And have you looked at the price of beef lately?
It is crazy. It reminds me a lot of this old Mike Peters cartoon from the inflationary period in the 1970s. A person goes into a butcher shop and the butcher's like, would you put that steak on layaway? We also.
Yeah. Take a guess. I'm not sure if you've looked, stew beef, you know, for stew, for chili, you know, this is not the best cuts. You know, guess how much? $10 a pound for the shitty stuff.
Yeah. The good stuff is like 20, 25.
Well, okay. So getting back to your question, the American people are seeing this. They're not seeing gas prices budge. I mean, I think $2.50 seems not outrageous price for gasoline in the 21st century America, but he promised that those prices would come down. They haven't.
No.
And they're looking at this guy who's spending an awful lot of time blowing up boats and, you know, threatening and trying to garner peace between Djibouti and Somalia or whatever the hell he's on today. That's hurting him. I think that is absolutely the gist and the crux of where the problem is.
I'm glad you brought this up, Scott. So, I mean, lest anyone think you're joking, Trump literally just announced his latest agreement between Congo and Rwanda.
So the Democratic Republic of Congo, two different Congos, by the way.
Yeah, there are two different Congos. So, but this is the big one, formerly Zaire, right? And, you know, I can't help but note the fact that this is of great interest because Eastern Congo be full of blood diamonds, right? So lots of other rare earth minerals and blah, blah.
Not gold leaf, because that would be, then we'd be at war with them.
Well, that's all the gold leaf has now been used. It's all on the wall at the Oval Office.
Oh, my God, Ted. It looks like it looks like a French whorehouse. It is egregious. And now they have the sign outside that in gold calligraphy that says the Oval Office. Have you seen this?
No, I've not seen that.
That's and they awesome. Have the breezeway that goes from the residency to the Oval Office that now is the presidential walk of fame.
Oh, is that with the one with the Biden picture of the, of the auto
first
the
Trump. Auto and I don't know. We've never talked about this because Ted and I are both cartoonists. Aesthetics matter to us, but the official portrait of Trump now,
Yeah. Well, I read that he like actually practices, you know, he actually has silly expressions in private and he's very smiley, but he on purpose when he's public, he said that he read a biography of Churchill and that Churchill always scowled. And so he feels that like to look like a tough guy, he always has to be, you know, like look like scowly and mean.
I'm just laughing at the idea of Donald Trump reading a book. sorry.
Yeah. Well, maybe he read about someone writing a book or something. I don't know. I mean, he's going to try to buy us off. I know you're going to love this. Next time I see you, we'll talk about this. But Trump wants to give everyone $2,000 each. So he wants to. I know you are hugely in favor of that sort of thing.
Oh, my gosh.
As a fiscal conservative. Anyway, guys, thanks for tuning in and thanks for hanging out this week. You've been watching Deprogram with Ted Roll and John Kiriakou with editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis, and my good friend sitting in. Please stay tuned. The TMI show with me and Manila Chan is coming right up with Rumble. You just sit tight. It'll just go automatic on YouTube. You've got to actually make an effort and go look. We will be back Monday at 9 a.m. here. John Kiriakou will be back. And so we're looking forward to all that. Scott, nice to see you. Have a great weekend.
It was great.